The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Eklund with a shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide. Morning Tide.
Tyler Toffoli on a brilliant feed from William Eklund. Macklin Severini, his first National Hockey League hat trick. Smith shoots. Score! Will Smith just tied the game!
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Here comes a head man feed over to Wenberg on the left to Smith. Chips it toward the goal. 13 seconds left in the game. Can the Sharks get one more chance? The Flames grab it. They clear it out. Klingberg's not going to get to it. Down the left side, Hanzik. Shoot. Score! Samuel Hanzik gets the empty net goal at 19 minutes and 55 seconds of the third period to clinch the victory for Calgary 2-0.
All right, what's happening, everyone? It is Friday morning. The Sharks' win streak has come to a close, and we have survived. The sun has come up, and the San Jose Sharks, for a second consecutive game, did not play very well start to finish. Now, I look at the last two games and see quite a few parallels. In the game against Minnesota, they were slow out of the gate. The offense wasn't doing much, and they were able to find a way to escape with a win late in that game. In this game, the Sharks were slow out of the gate. There was essentially nothing in terms of offensive production. They had one shot in the first period, five in the second. Then I think they had 10 in the third, and it feels like a majority of that came in the last 5 minutes. They could not get one past Mr. Wolf, the South Bay native, and they found themselves on the losing side of a 2-0 victory, wasting an absolutely phenomenal performance by Yaroslav Askarov. And one of the things that I kind of think usually happens in sports, that if it takes a miracle or you win in a miraculous fashion, as the Sharks did against Minnesota, then you need to make sure that your game is totally different in your next game, and the Sharks did not. They were very, very similar and, you know, obviously, in my opinion, worse. And we saw that evident from the first few moments of the game. They were chucking the puck around, for lack of a better term. They were not on top of their game. They were not capable of playing a clean game. And just far too many times in this game, I saw the Sharks trying to make a cross-ice pass at the blue line when they were trying to gain zone entry, as opposed to just getting it deep, turning it over, and watching it go the opposite direction. That's not how you win in the NHL. That's not going to be a way that you find success, and you've got to be able to just get it deep. Instead of looking for the perfect pass, find the safe move. Put it deep, chuck and chase, go out in the corner and get it, and try and create some offense after that if you're finding the team you're going against is having a very, very high level of success. And so when you have turnovers as consistently as the Sharks did in this game, if you're not clean with the puck, the other team is going to eventually capitalize. And the Sharks, even though they were not playing their best game, made a just critical error in their own end, behind their own blue line, gave the puck away when Kurashev and Dickinson had some sort of a miscommunication, which Brett Hedekin always points out is free, and then suddenly the puck was in the back of the net. And you're just kind of looking at this and thinking, they're playing awful. They're only down 1-0. Can they find a way to escape with some sort of offense, some sort of, you know, quick tying goal and send it to overtime again? And no, they weren't, because as they got deeper and deeper into the game, they were just not able to find what they were looking for. And overall, I do think that it's important that the Sharks have difficulty and have a loss. And obviously, we want them to turn into a team that's a powerhouse, but we need to see how they respond to a loss, because everything's been going very, very well for them. They've been able to win, you know, they won 8 games out of their, you know, last 10 games before last night. Now let's see how they respond. Now let's see what happens next. Now let's see what they do when they go into this next bit of scheduling. They've got one more on the road. Can they take 2 out of 3 on the road trip? If they do that, this is still a very, very successful road trip. That's a winning road trip. And then they come back home, and obviously we have to see what they can do there. And they've got, you know, once again, difficult teams on the schedule in front of them. You know, they're going to be facing Utah. They're going to be facing LA. Ottawa, Boston. You know, let's see what happens in those games. Then they go out on the road. They're going to be facing a team like the Avalanche. Then they've got, you know, Vancouver on a Friday night. And then they're going to be on the road facing Vegas. These are all difficult games. These are all going to be true tests for the San Jose Sharks. We need to see how they bounce back from this difficulty and see if they can keep this from turning into an extended losing streak. And so that's why I'm not actually that concerned about the loss in and of itself, because it presents a new challenge for San Jose to show that they have grown from seasons past. Can they bounce back quickly with the win and start to win, you know, consecutive games? And like I said, turn this into a road trip where they win 2 out of 3 and see if they can come home and do some damage there as well and show that they are a capable home team, that it wasn't just one homestand, that it wasn't just one stretch from October to November. That's the next step for this team. That's what I'm really curious about, because listen, the good teams, the great teams, every team has losses. That's unavoidable in this sport. What we are curious to see about now is whether or not the Sharks can bounce back and have a really high quality performance and can have a really, really good night to show that they are capable of being a consistent team in the NHL. Now, the things that concern me in the last two games, the dead legs, let's see what happens in Seattle. Maybe they are just a little bit tired. Maybe they are just a little bit beat up with this stretch of scheduling, which has been pretty brutal in terms of the quality of competition they've faced, A, and then B, also the fact that it's, you know, it's been hot and heavy. You know, the schedule, it's compressed because of the Olympics. So they're getting everybody in there. They're getting every game. They're getting the back-to-backs. It's like that for everybody. Just like the Sharks have had opponents who've been, you know, a little bit of a step slow on other nights, the Sharks have been a step slow on some nights. So these are all things that I take into consideration when I look at what happened last night with San Jose. It's a long season. They have played 18 games. They've got 8 wins up to this point. They've been playing much better as of late, and I want to see what happens next. Now, the concerning aspect out of last night is how bad the injury to Jeff Skinner's lower body is. It looked like an ankle or lower leg injury. I've really enjoyed his play. He is a high-quality veteran, but if that means that somebody else has got to step up, whether it's Cardwell, whether it is going to be a Chernyshov or a Musty, maybe we're going to see Ostapchuk come up. Maybe we're going to see Giles again. I don't know. Those are all the things that we're kind of waiting to find out. But when there is injury for one player, which we never root for, and it's awful, there are opportunities for other players. I'm not trying to make this some sort of a quote-unquote Wally Pipp situation. I'm just saying if a young player from the Barracuda gets a shot, make sure you take advantage of that situation. Make sure if you're one of these young players, like an Ethan Cardwell, who I have thought has played really, really well, that you force the issue and say, yeah, I deserve to be here. My game is high quality enough to be here night in, night out, and that means you've got a good problem. That means you've got depth. That means you have a lot of players who want to show how good they are. But I don't want to dwell too much on last night's loss, because when you get shut out, there's not a whole lot to talk about. But I do have a great interview now, as we are joined by the man behind the Hockey Guy, Shannon Skanes. Shannon, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Not too bad. Been busy with the season being well underway and just past the month mark. But yeah, it's going pretty well.
It's been entertaining up to this point. And you know, as I watch your videos, as I've told you before, every night at the end of the games or the next morning, if I've gone to bed early, I always laugh to myself about how you made whiteboards cool again. And I will forever get a kick out of that. You still get a kick out of it yourself, right?
The whiteboard thing sort of evolved into being, and I do see the occasional, you need to get a green screen, you need to get, and I think I don't think I do. I'm happy with the whiteboards. I enjoy rotating them through too. So like, I've already got the board set up for tonight's games with the way I've got it set up in here. I've got a news board. I've got the board for the preview. I've already got that set up for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that preview tomorrow morning. Like, I've got everything organized in my own way, but it is organized. I like it this way. So it's worked out pretty well.
No, and now my kids, you know, they're 12 and 10, and they're angry that we will not give them phones. But I do think it's funny that when they watch your videos, they'll be like, "Dad, we should get a whiteboard and put some, you know, re-update the standings every morning." I'm like, "Maybe we will. Maybe we will again." So you're breaking through to the Gen Alphas. So I think you should be proud of that. You know, before we go shark centric, and yeah, Maybe this will be your answer, but what is your early season surprise, or what has really intrigued you about the league up to this point?
I think I expected the Ducks to be better. I didn't necessarily expect them to be this much better this soon. I knew that hiring Quenneville as coach would help, but Anaheim's flat out terrifying with their speed, and it has been very interesting watching as some established teams that are normally really good are struggling, and some teams that have struggled for years are finally getting at least close to the playoff line, and it looks like should be playing games that matter into February or March.
No, and that was something that we riffed on right before we started, is just that we're seeing some turnover, and obviously people were paying attention to Bedard and Celebrini and Carlson previously and Hudson, but those names are more in the mix, as is a Schaefer. And we're watching, the Sharks make a little noise, Chicago make a little noise, like you alluded to, Anaheim. Obviously, the Kraken have gotten off to a decent start. We have watched, Detroit, maybe not as hot as they were, but they've been trying to break through after a decade to get out of that long slumber. And it's fascinating because while I think we all acknowledge that Florida is not their full selves due to them being beat up and dealing with injuries,
Right.
there is enough talent and star power around this league for everybody to get the attention they deserve.
I agree. I think, like, whenever they talk about expansion, and the first thing I see is, well, there aren't enough superstars to go around. I think there are, and I think there's enough players who we've seen get a chance in Vegas or Seattle who can be good, productive top six forwards. I do think that we're in this age now where there are enough talented players to go around. And it's I do remember an era where there were not enough players to go around, and that was really, really tough to watch. But I don't think we're there anymore. And yeah, there's a lot of good, exciting young players right now.
It's fun, and I think that's one of the things that they've obviously done with the advertising, the golden era or golden age, however they're deeming it. But I think the skill level just on display, whether it's the Bedard snipes or Macklin Celebrini making an absurd pass or some of the saves we've seen, and then McDavid spinning backhand goal the other day, and then there was one last night, I'm forgetting who it was. It was just a ridiculous toe drag for a backhand goal. I mean, the skills on display, not just from the superstars either. I mean, it's a whole lot of fun, and it's bringing in I believe a whole lot of just fans and viewers. And I imagine that's bringing even more of an audience to your videos, because I feel like I have more people than previously that are sending me your videos who I wouldn't have even deemed hockey fans before.
I do think that it has helped. I think one thing that's changed in hockey is there used to be this very sort of baked in idea that you don't hot dog, you don't showboat, you go out, you do just the basics. And some of the goals we're seeing now would have caused a fight 20 years ago. Would have been like, what, that move is, you don't do that in a game. That's not right. And even if it scores a goal, it's not right. That's not traditional hockey. And some of these hot dog moves that now we like, the Michigan now is just, it's part of the game. Teams have learned how to defend it, but it does make it more exciting. It makes it more fun to watch. That guys are allowed to be creative. They're encouraged to be creative. Players are finding different ways to work out in the off season. They're staying in better shape. And so for players like Ovechkin, Crosby, and some of the older players, they have to evolve as well and keep ramping up their game because everybody else is as well. I think it's just a more talented and creative league than we used to see.
And I think that what you alluded to with, an Ovechkin or a Crosby having to evolve, that's a previous generation. In the middle, you kind of have McDavid, who I think in ways fed off of what he saw from Sid and Ovi, and that helped create his game along with his just incredible physical gifts. And then we're watching this younger generation. So we kind of have three generations still playing like absolute superstars at the old age, and then the young guys playing like superstars. And it creates a really interesting dynamic, but I think you can obviously credit Sid and Ovi, and I know there's some guys I'm leaving out, but that highlight of their play early on is what is spurring the incredible skill level we're seeing at such a young age right now.
Yeah, we're really seeing that creativity and skill being encouraged. And that hasn't always been, you would think that would be how the NHL is always targeted, but it hasn't. It's still, there's still, size is very much something that drives the league as well. I still am always surprised on draft day that there's some big players that get drafted ahead of really skilled smaller players that we look back and go, how did they not see this? They did, but they still drafted by size. But it feels like that's less common now, and we understand more and more that the skill and the speed and the intelligence that these players have on the ice, that's what has to be valued just as much as size.
No, and I think the other aspect of this is that with the Four Nations last year, I think that also got a lot of eyeballs. And then you're entering a really interesting situation now where Team Canada is having to make some very, very difficult situations. And a guy that we've talked about before, who you've been very big on since day number one, is William Eklund, as I awkwardly transitioned to the Sharks. But I remember you were very big on him early on when a lot of people said that he was too small, and you referenced how he was ranked as a skater among the European skaters and that you liked a lot of what he could do. He had a little bit of an injury for the last week or so, but before that was essentially becoming that point per game player, driving his line, getting between the dots, and really making things happen, forcing the issue. I'm just curious, you know, from your point of view, I guess, is this this is what I expected from William Eklund.
He's right about where I figured he would be. I've been really impressed with Will Smith and the chemistry with Celebrini. And Celebrini's ability to elevate the players playing with him is just, and the confidence, the swagger he's already showing is crazy. It's not coming across as arrogance either. It's just coming across as, I'm going to do this, I can do this. And his celebrations after the goal are basically like, all right, that I knew that was going to go. And he's, I really like the confidence. That's something I don't think I've seen a lot with San Jose for years.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of nice to see that swagger with a young player like that. But I do like Eklund. I really like the young, like last night here in Abbotsford, we saw the San Jose Barracuda, and I was like, okay, I know all these players. And I'm going through like, there's another good prospect. And of course they destroyed Abbotsford the night before. And when I looked at their lineup, I got it. Like, there's real depth now in the San Jose organization as well.
It's impressive to watch, because we see so often in sports to where you have these prospects to where you're not sure if it's going to work. And we still don't know on all these guys, but when they've brought up an Ethan Cardwell, he's played well and he's scored for San Jose and he's been dynamic. And I think, you know, we've seen what Chernyshov looks like he's potential and capable of doing. Yep. The same thing with a Quentin Musty. And, you know, I think it's interesting because for a juxtaposition, I know a lot of people have told me the knock on Vancouver and Calgary is they refuse to ever go through the pain of a true rebuild that San Jose recently has gone through. Does that ring true to you, or is that too much of an outsider's lens?
There's a lot of frustration in the Vancouver market that when the team needed to do the rebuild and Trevor Linden was calling for it, that basically he ended up out of his job because reportedly people weren't listening to him and ownership had no interest in a rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of a full rebuild, but I'm okay with like some sort of a reset where you take a couple of years, you build up prospects and draft picks. My frustration in Vancouver has always been, okay, they traded another top draft pick. They traded another player to try to sandbag and get into the playoffs, but they're not trying to become Stanley Cup champion. They're not getting those franchise players. And so I feel bad for Pettersson because he just gets slaughtered by media and fans locally, but he doesn't have superstar players to play with. He's got some good players.
Mm-hmm.
The Canucks have never surrounded their star players with really good star depth, at least not since the heyday back in the early 2010s with the Sedins and Kessler in that era. And so it is frustrating because the franchise just feels like it's spinning its wheels. Even now, we're going to go out and try to get a center. And so they want to try to, you know, peg their way through to make it into the playoffs, but there's no long-term plan. So we'd love to, there is no long-term plan.
But that's the danger. Cause I've often wondered about how differently the Sharks rebuild will be viewed if they do not land a Macklin Celebrini. And that's not a knock on any of the other young talents that came out of that draft, but that's part of the narrative. But I mean, it is working for San Jose ostensibly, and I don't know if they continue winning 8 out of 10 games for the rest of the season, but as I've heard you frequently say, it feels like the Sharks are starting to figure things out. And I guess more than just Macklin Celebrini, what more are you seeing from the Sharks when you watch their games?
Well, even when they were 0-4-2 to start, I know I'm doing videos. I was like, they're better than this. I don't know why they're still winless. I swear they're not the same as they were previous years. I don't know what's happening here. The goaltending had its issues very early in the season. Defensively, there were some miscues as well. But San Jose really does seem to have started figuring this out. And it's not just the wins. It's being able to protect leads. It's one of the things that's impressed me with the Ducks as well. The other California team that's not the Kings. And that's part of learning how to win, is learning how to protect those leads and not to get rattled. Like with San Jose, I don't know how many times over the last few years you'd see them allow a goal and then they just slump, and all of a sudden there's two or three more that are in. And that doesn't seem to be happening this year, outside of early on when Askarov was struggling and Nedeljkovic was going on journeys out of the net and everything. But since the goaltending's really solidified over the last few weeks, yeah, San Jose right now is a team that I don't think anybody would want to play if they eke their way into a playoff spot. I think they'd be a terrifying opponent for anybody, especially as a number two wild card where there's no pressure or expectation.
When we juxtapose that, though, with what they're still trying to build towards, and I, you know, the teardown is done, but it's still in the building phase, does that create a situation for Mike Greer where if this team ahead of schedule is looking like they can get into the playoffs, does he move any of those large numbers of assets that he would have to try and improve it? Or do you say, no, you're playing with house money. If you can get into the playoffs, this is not the time you start, you know, trying to make trades towards the deadline to improve the team. You just take what you have and see what happens.
I could see, I mean, they have a lot of cap money they could put on long-term injured reserve. We know that. And I could see them putting a couple of players on LTIR and bringing in a couple of rentals at the deadline. Probably nothing earth-shattering, but at least a couple of rentals. Because then what you're telling your room is, I think you guys can do this. And you're close enough. I'm going to give you guys a chance. And we're going to add a couple of pieces here to aid you guys. I think they're in that kind of a position to do that without mortgaging a lot of their future.
With Macklin Celebrini, it does seem, like I said, that not only has he accelerated the timeline, but he is the type of a player that can kind of pull the team along with him, that he has the ability to elevate his game. I'm just curious that when you're watching Celebrini, and I know I'm way too close to it, but when you watch him, does he look like a player who is, as some of the people have said, could be the face of the NHL for the next generation? I often wonder about how much me being or at every game or watching every game or being in the midst of it, how much my perspective is skewed from an outsider's view.
Oh, I would definitely say he could be the face of that next generation. The battle between either he and Bedard or he and Leo Carlson, I'm not sure which one's going to be a bigger feud. Obviously Anaheim and San Jose, California teams don't like each other in the first place. So there's a natural born feud there, but I definitely think Celebrini Bedard games could replace the Crosby Ovechkin that always gets that national broadcast, which would be nice because Western teams generally don't get that traditionally. We don't see as much attention for the star players on the West Coast that you're going to get on the East Coast. So that would definitely be nice. Celebrini's just too talented to be ignored.
I guess that's the hard thing to really wrap my head around, is that he's playing a game at age 19 that just seems so mature and so complete, and he's adjusting to the game as it adjusts to him in real time. And it kind of makes us not pay attention to the fact that you have seen, like I alluded to, William Eklund really come on strong. Will Smith is having a great start to his second year and people aren't talking about it. You know, Shakir Mukhmudulin is coming in and playing well. But I think the other part about it is that people want those rivalries with the Celebrini, the Carlson, the Bedard. But it was really interesting, and I'm sure you saw this the other day, where Bedard said, oh yeah, I'm happy for Macklin Celebrini. No one's happier than I am when he scores. And it's like, you have to remind yourself that because these hockey circles are so tight, these guys have pre-existing relationships. As much as the fans want it, you know, want it to be blood and guts, that's not how these guys on the ice are always viewing it, unless they're actively going head-to-head in a game.
Yeah, they're both BC boys, so they definitely would know each other pretty well, would be my guess. And it does feel like it's different with this generation. I think with social media, with everything that goes on, I think a lot of these players get to know each other before they reach the NHL. I don't think it matters come playoff time. I think then the hate ramps up pretty quickly during playoff time, even if you're against your buddies. But it is definitely interesting to see this generation and how close they are. But yeah, I'm a proponent too of both Celebrini and Bedard being on Team Canada. I am a big proponent of go young, go fast, and go that route. I don't know that they will. I think one or the other probably makes it, but I hope it's both.
Just to ask you about Bedard, because I am just a fan of the idea of them both being generational talents. That might be how it's looked at when all is said and done. When you see his short range snipe and the amount of generation he gets out of that shot that he has, the push pull with the full body turn, is there any direct comparison that you can make to that? Because he had a snipe the other day that had such extreme speed that it looked like a pitcher, you know, throwing a 106 mile per hour heater, except from like half the distance. I mean, you couldn't really track the puck. And I'm just trying to imagine what that's going to do to goalies, because he's only going to get better and more skilled with that shot.
Bedard makes it look effortless. One thing that I noticed with Bedard, and everybody was focusing on his numbers, there were always flashes in every game of what he was going to be able to do. And like the way that he's got that release off his stick, like I'm trying to think back to guys like Bure, who just had that ability to bring everybody to their feet and just was made it look easy. Ovechkin definitely during his prime years made it look easy, like he could score 80 goals a year if he really felt like it. McDavid has that ability to just kind of look at it and go, all right, I'm just going to go through everybody and score. And there's definitely that with Bedard and his intelligence. I also think the defensive game for a lot of these young players gets undersold. There was a time in the NHL where every star player that came in was kind of bad defensively. And so you're kind of like, okay, well, they'll learn that part of the game later. They're not as bad defensively now as they used to be. They're more complete players. So that's why I never panicked with Bedard, because I could see he was doing a lot of other things. And I figured eventually the offensive side would work itself out. But just trying to think, that release is, yeah, it is elite. It's one of the best. I keep thinking Paul Kariya, but like it's just, it is hard to just fathom how, like, you can hear the announcers, guys who've been in the NHL, talking about that release and how ridiculous it is, just how fast it's off his stick. So it's good those have started going in for him. It's bad for everybody else.
Well, with Ovechkin, he was always on top of the circle, the left circle, Ovi, boom, there's your
His
goal.
spot.
But with Bedard, he's drifting through and sometimes out of it. And it's like just pops off his stick. It's like there's my joke with Connor McDavid is that there's like a jetpack that he's wearing that we can't see. And with Bedard, it's like there's a little charge on the end of his stick that we can't see where the puck just explodes off of it. And this goes back to my original point, I guess, is just like I feel every night I'm seeing a candidate for goal of the year, or I'm seeing maybe something that I haven't specifically seen before, and it's all happening so rapidly on top of each other. It's just making the NHL as a whole seem every night see so much fun. And then I guess to the other point is like you also don't know what's going to happen. I feel like there's more unexpected finishes in the NHL this year to where you're like, huh, that was a better game than I thought it would be. That was more fun than I expected. That was not my expected outcome, which again just breeds to this whole, you know, fun start to the season. I think everybody kind of feels it too.
Yeah, it's with about 80% of the games being one goal or a goal and an empty netter difference, it does bring that air of complete and total unpredictability to hockey, which I think is good for the game. I think it's good for the league. I think that it's like I do understand that people want to see dynasties and dominant teams, but I think it's better if everybody feels like they have a chance at the start of the night to win the game and then see how that plays out. And I think that's more interesting to watch on TV than just one team running everybody over. And for me, watching the games every night, the fact that every night's completely different really helps too. So I'm not just standing here and saying, all right, so all these teams won again tonight. All these teams lost. We got an 8-point difference already for this team. They're out of it. That's not really happening this year. So I do think that makes for a better product.
That said, you saw the footage of Barkov already working out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he'll probably be back before expected. It's
Yeah.
Barkov.
And everyone should be very, very scared about that when it does occur. But Shannon, I will let you go, man, because I know you've got stuff to do, but I appreciate your time and your work as always, and I hope I can bug you again soon. All right, man.
Sounds good.
Again, that was Shannon, the hockey guy of YouTube fame. We are all out of time. I will see you on Saturday, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock go time, as the Sharks look to wrap up their road trip, taking 2 out of 3, ending with a win in Seattle. Let's see if they can bounce back. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.